Good.
Hello and welcome to what we're calling a security breakdown. And the, I suppose we should talk about a little bit about the inspiration of where this came from. Why are we doing yet another podcast? Everyone's got a podcast these days. Well, it came from this book, Very Bad People, which I picked up randomly in the train station and started reading. It sounded interesting. The inside story of the fight against the world's network of corruption. And it was fascinating. It was the story of how three, what I assume were pretty young people at the time, had a beer together in a London pub. They were pretty incensed about the behavior of the Khmer Rouge in Cambodia, despotic, horrible, nasty regime that was murdering people. And they decided, as you do over a beer, that they were going to do something about it. And they did. It was kind of crazy. You know, they managed to get themselves together to gather evidence that would ultimately result in the Khmer Rouge being defunded and taken down, which three people over a beer, that's not bad going.
Pretty impressive for us, an afternoon's work.
And I'd said to you, Jack, and to Scott, our marketing legend, wouldn't it be awesome to talk to people like that to find out, you know, what they did from the horse's mouth? Mm. And said, wouldn't it be great if we had a podcast where we ultimately got people like that on?
Yeah.
And that was sort of the inception for this this podcast, wasn't it?
Yeah. We want to talk about issues that are in our field and that we're interested in, but we want to talk to people in a way that, you know, is deep diving and hard hitting and interesting, and maybe challenging subjects that don't get talked about because people are a bit afraid of them.
Yeah.
So that's the idea.
Yeah. So, I mean, what we realized when we were talking about what this podcast would be was that there are actually a ton of things that we weren't sure about that we'd got questions to and didn't have good answers. So challenges in the security industry, if you like.
Yeah.
And so this series of podcasts will be looking at those issues, trying to examine our own thoughts and feelings about them, and recognizing that we don't have the answers, and just trying to explore those topics. And first topic, which we should move on to, I guess, is, remind me.
The first topic is the ethics of fear in selling security.
Yeah.
So I think you probably have quite a bit of experience with, I think, selling security, I hope. And I think we need to look at it from a view of the ethics and what is the right way to sell security and doing the right thing, because we're very focused on, you know, making the right decisions and treating people and our customers with a respect that they deserve rather than just forcing a product down their throat. So I guess, you know, the first question is like, what do you define as ethical in terms of selling, and where do you see that being a problem in the security industry as a whole?
Yeah.
Firstly,
well, I remember when we were joining the BSIA, which was a number of years ago now. The BSIA is the British Security Industry Association, so it's the voice of the security industry, and they issued at that time to potential members a code of practice to which you must adhere, and it was actually documented in there: you must not sell by fear. And it's an interesting thing in the security industry, because I think, you know, naturally, people are buying security because there is a risk. So there is some, whether you call it fear or whether you call it a recognition of risk, bad things can happen. That's the nature of the beast with the security industry. So how do you go about selling in a different way?
Well, there must be a line drawn in the sand where you go from you go from selling because of a defined risk. You know, there's a clear reason for security measures. You know, you want to protect your assets, you want to protect your family or your staff or whatever it might be. But then you can overstep that mark. So I guess the fine line is overstepping that mark where you're just scaring people into buying whatever you're selling, regardless of whether it's worth it for them or not. And I think
sort of the cowboy approach, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. You know, you could sit with a customer and speculate for hours. You know, what about if they did this? What about if an intruder did this? What about if somebody, mm-hmm. nine times out of 10, those things aren't going to happen, but the customer's suddenly going to be terrified that all these things could happen. They might never have thought about it before ever.
Yeah.
And then for suddenly to put all of these ideas into their head, that then generates fear because it's something that they don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't.
Well, I think that's part of it. You are probably talking to a potential client because you're regarded as an expert in whatever it is you're doing. So there's that element of trust placed in you to give good advice. In fact, wasn't there was it Panorama or something like that where they investigated the selling practices of a security business? And they were absolutely selling by fear. I'm certain that's exactly what happened. I'm not going to name any names because that would be totally unprofessional.
Hold on.
No. However, it does happen. And within the industry, we have to recognize that we're in a position of trust.
Mm.
And any abuse of that is totally against what it is we're setting out to do. You know, the industry is set up to serve and protect people,
yeah.
Basically.
Yeah. You have a responsibility to not just protect your customers, but and protect them from outside attack, but also protect them from misinformation.
Yeah.
And from having the wrong product that's not going to help them, because that's, you know, spending money for the sake of spending money isn't going to help anybody do anything.
I suppose that's where some of the answers get a little bit unclear for us as well. You know, it should be obvious that you don't terrify people into buying something.
Yeah.
But where do you draw the line between something that could terrify someone and actually there's a recognition that there is a risk that you have not identified that you ought to be informed about? So is that not selling by fear when you identify a risk that somebody has? So they're not afraid of it until you tell them that it exists.
They don't know it exists. But if it's a genuine thing, then maybe that you have a responsibility to make them aware of that.
Mm.
But maybe you're being irresponsible if you're giving them ideas about things that could happen that are very unlikely to happen. You know, you could say to somebody, well, you need to buy a reinforced concrete and steel roof because what if a helicopter drops out of the sky? It's like, it could happen, but it's so unlikely that would be wasted money. Yeah. And it's exactly the same for security products. You know, you could sell them a 100 camera CCTV system and with a PIR in every square inch of your house.
Mm.
But that's not going to be any more valuable than a basic security system, but they've spent 10 or 100 times as much money and they didn't need to spend it. So that's where I guess the line is, where you're responsible for making sure the customer has a product that's worthwhile having and could protect them in the event of a likely attack, but isn't overwhelming them with fear into the point where they will spend whatever money they have to escape from that hypothetical situation. I guess that's the point.
Yeah. So in theory, and I would probably argue most of the time in practice as well, a lot of this is covered off by relevant standardization, regulation, whatever you want to call it. So without getting too dry and boring, within the in electronic intruder alarm industry, there's the suite of standards known as EN50131, part 7 of which is application guidelines. So it's basically telling industry how to behave.
Mm-hmm.
So, and within that, it will say things like, at the very first point, there needs to be a critical risk survey, risk assessment of a potential site to secure, which takes into account realistic risks, you know, what's going to happen. And similarly, with what we do, security fog, there's a code of practice produced by the BSIA, which goes through a procedure that any potential installation company should go through, where they do the critical risk survey, identify that, make sure that they're complying with the customer's requests in the first place. I want you to do these things for me. And then, so all of that should be adhered to. But interestingly, as I said, that Panorama program exposed that's not always the case.
It's not being adhered to. I guess it's the easy way, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It's easy to sell if somebody's afraid. It's easy to sell if they've just had a big loss and they're terrified of it happening again and they don't want to go through all that, the pain and suffering of being broken into and losing.
But normally that is when we're actually talking to people, because security essentially is a grudge purchase.
Yeah.
I mean, I was saying to you the other day that nobody gets out of bed in the morning and goes, oh, do you know what I'm going to do today? I'm going to buy a new intruder alarm system or a new CCTV.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm certain that there are people who are proactive in that way, but they, I would argue that probably in the minority.
Yeah, they're always the outlier. And it is weirdly, it's not even refreshing to speak to somebody who's got that mindset, because it's like, well, actually, it would be better if everybody was this proactive.
Mm.
It's not. It's more.
Have you got an intruder? Don't ask me.
I've got nothing worth protecting.
So yeah.
They can just have whatever's in them. They can have my knives and forks.
Yeah. Yeah.
Junk.
But I think that's, you know, the predominant attitude of everybody. When we've all experienced where you've got the there's a power cut on the area where you live, and there's intruder alarms ringing everywhere, because, and that just tells you one thing straight away: the intruder alarm's not been maintained, because battery's flat. Exactly. Yeah. So you know instantly that. But then equally, instantly, we're all thinking exactly that's what's happened, not that person's potentially been broken into and needs help, you know. So it's
quite an uncommon thing. Well, maybe for where we live, where it's, you know, quiet village town, there's not a lot going on, there's not that much crime, we're quite lucky in that regard. But it maybe can, it can happen. People do have intruder alarms, but maybe from our perspective, we would just kind of push it to the back of our minds.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about how most people tend to address their security measures then, because I think there's like a process that most rational human beings go through, which is, I've got a property, whether it's a business or a home or whatever, and what I need first and foremost is insurance.
Yeah.
So I have to have that insurance. And what does the insurer tell me I need to do? And that's the way most people think.
Yeah.
You go, well, the insurer says I need to do this to meet their requirements. So I've got to have, I've ticked a box that says, yes, I've got an intruder alarm and I arm it every night. Of course I do.
Yeah. You do the bare minimum to allow the insurance agent to accept that you've done.
So you can get the insurer
to do whatever you know, you're not going to go above and beyond. And I guess then the next step from that is that you've got your basic insurance required intruder alarm system.
Mm.
And then it fails.
Mm.
And then...
Well, maybe it works, but...
It fails.
The intruders aren't deterred or whatever, yeah.
Which is a failure, right?
I suppose.
If it doesn't do what it's supposed to do, which is stop you from having an intruder attack, then it's not doing its job. It's failed. To me...
Is it the only job? I suppose you're right. Yeah, I suppose you're right. I suppose the intruder alarm industry would argue, well, actually, it's a detection measure, and if it's detected, then it's done its job.
Maybe. But
you get a deterrence effect as well.
Does the customer expect that?
No, you expect with an intruder alarm
that they something go away.
Or there'll be some other result, you know, like ultimately, if it's a police monitor system, the police will come, or there'll be some. If you're monitored, there'll be some sort of response to...
Maybe a bit naive to expect that if your intruder alarm goes off, that the intruder will just run.
Mm.
But I think an education thing is that, like you said, an intruder alarm is an alarm to warn of an intruder and, you know, inform that something is going on.
Mm.
So maybe there's an education thing where maybe the general public don't expect that and they don't understand.
I think this is the interesting part, isn't it? That... Straight away, we've started, because we're industry professionals, if you like. Well, we are industry professionals, but we are industry professionals. You're younger than me, but you've still been in the intruder alarm industry the security industry for, what, 5-6 years, something like that?
Maybe not that much, but getting there.
For me, it's obviously, as mentioned many times, a lot longer.
50 or 60.
50, is it 50 or 60? I will get you later. But straight away, we've started talking about how most people buy security so that, you know, there's an onus on them to comply with insurance requirements. And then instantly, we've started talking about all the things that go wrong with that approach. So it's almost that fear-based approach again. And I think there's something really interesting around that. We produced some marketing recently for an event that we did, the Fight Back Against Retail Crime Day. And Scott, again, our marketing legend, was front and center on producing the collateral that went with that. And the very first bit he produced, it had that image on of very bad people doing bad things.
Yeah.
And a lot of
that fear.
Yeah, built into it.
The thing that's going to instill fear is an image of somebody that's doing a crime.
Yeah.
And
I think that that's not an unnatural thing that Scott produced. You see it quite a lot. A lot of the marketing in the security industry is, you know, dark, shady corners, a guy with a balaclava on is attacking somewhere. And it's almost like saying, this is what could happen to you if you don't do the thing we say.
From one side, you know, it's emotive, you know, because it makes people react in a way that is fear.
Yeah.
Right? But which is, it's a strong emotional reaction. It's a powerful tool because you instill fear into somebody and then they... You know, their lizard brain.
That's the bit we're saying is wrong. Shouldn't be done.
But then, like you said, with marketing, actually, the final release of that marketing material didn't happen.
Well, that's right. So there was an absolutely correct challenge from the group, and so the whole event was supported by the Reading Business Improvement District. I think that's the bid anyway.
The bid,
yeah, and. The Thames Valley Police were involved, and they quite rightly pushed back and said, look, fight back against retail crime is about the community, the retailers, the supply chain, the emergency responders all coming together. Can't the message be more positive? And actually, that was the outcome, and it was universally well received. It was a much more positive approach, you know, that there are different ways of tackling these sticky issues, because it's no secret that retail crime has gone doolally. It's on the news all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Shop staff being attacked and you know, horrible abuse. So there's an effort to try and do something about that, but with a positive message. So I suppose that was a good message to me, that there is definitely that different spin that you can put on.
I think it worked well in the context of that event as well, because it was about multiple different groups of people coming together against this single thing, and it represented, from a marketing perspective, a better view of what we expected out of that event in the first place, because we want people to come together. We want people to have discussions between themselves. And actually, I think another positive view is minimizing
the negative point.
The negative.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it's accepting that only by working together, so no one stakeholding group has got ultimate responsibility. Obviously, the people at the sharp end of it are the ones that are suffering the losses.
Yeah.
So there's a responsibility there. But equally, that they shouldn't be facing that problem in the first place. So there's got to be like a working group collaboration that tackles it. It's not just the responsibility of the people suffering from it to do things about it. It's not just the responsibility of the emergency response groups to respond to it, and it's not just the responsibility of supply chain to come up with innovative solutions. I said it right, didn't I?
Good job.
Yeah, normally
it also sounds
the word weird. Wrong, but it sounds weird when I say it.
Sounds
right.
Weird that it's right now. After so,
I normally say innovative, and I don't know why. It's like a blind spot.
I really hope that this is nothing else that we say today. It's just that innovative sparks a debate.
And let us know in the comments.
I want to know.
Yeah, is it innovative, innovative, or what's the other third way of saying it?
Innovative,
which is the British English way of saying it. Innovative.
Is it?
Yeah.
You told me it was the American way.
No, that's innovative is the American. Anyway, we're going off topic. The point being that it's not just the responsibility of the security industry to come up with the solutions, because ultimately, you know, our view as a business is that when we're providing security, we'd rather we weren't doing it at all, because we'd rather the problems didn't exist. And I'm not going to wax lyrical about that, but, you know, we've been doing this a long time, and you get to see all kinds of things, and you just think, well, surely there's better ways than a solution-based approach where you're selling something to solve
that
problem.
I wrote something in my book once. I write a lot of things in my book. And it said, wouldn't it be nice if we lived in a world where we didn't have to have security. Like, surely that would be better.
Yeah.
And I think that's a great message, like, from our perspective. Although from the outside, it sounds kind of counterintuitive, because we want to, you know, sell a product. We're capitalists. We want to make money. We want to buy cars and houses and whatever. But all of that's kind of secondary if the world's just a bit of a better place and everybody's a little bit happier and a little bit safer.
Or a lot safer and a lot happier. And
I suppose
it's interesting in our business, is that I know we're going way off now, but in our business, there's kind of both types of mentality where we've got idealists, and I'm a bit of an idealist, I think you are too, and we've also got people that regard themselves also as realists, where it's like, yeah, but are we really going to solve the world's problems, you know, with fog generators? And
well,
we could try,
yeah,
we can, you know, we can try and tackle some stuff. It was, there was an interesting conversation actually, because we were talking with some people that help us out with some marketing, and we were espousing those views, and they were like, yeah, but you know, that's all well and good. Because what we were trying to say was, isn't it great that there are some success stories? Like, there's an offender rehabilitation program in the West Midlands. I think the chap who runs it's called Stuart Thorogood, from memory, but they do marvelous work where they help people turn their lives around away from crime. And you hear some really powerful presentations from those people who were previously criminals,
yeah,
and how they'd ended up in that position. But then I heard a counter view, which is like, well, yeah, that also makes a ton of sense, which is, what about the victims, you know? And because those are the people that, when they've suffered crime, they're left behind picking up the pieces. It can have very, very powerful effects, you know? So I appreciate we've gone a little bit off the ethics of selling by fear and into more of the purpose-driven stuff around the business. I think the whole thing, it all goes together in a way.
Yeah, you know? I mean, I'd like to think that we have an ethical way of selling our product, which is driven by the like purpose of the business, which is, you know, the crux of it is that we want to help everyone everywhere be more safe and be more secure as a right. So if you can be safe because you've got, you know, a safe product in place where you can protect people with that product, or if you can be secure because you have made the right decisions where you can, you know, I don't know.
Yeah,
be good.
But that's the most. Back on, yeah. But like I was saying, that all of that sort of links together. But back on topic, that perception we've got that the marketing certainly is normally driven by dark imagery and all that sort of thing. How should the industry? I know we've talked about a different way of doing the marketing, but shouldn't there be a conversation within the industry about how we talk about what we do and how we, you know, change the way of marketing? Because we've already agreed that selling by fear is bad. Yeah.
Yeah. So how do we do it right? Is that a question?
Yeah, it is.
How do we get it right? Yeah. Well, I think you can look at a lot of sales tactics, especially the more old fashioned, sort of smarmy, greasy salesman tactics.
What are you trying to say? Nothing.
You could look at that as almost, you know, not necessarily selling by fear, but not ethical ways of selling, you know, that really pushy, we've already got it signed off for you, here's your printed discount, all that sort of stuff. And actually, I think maybe an ethical way of selling is just listening to what the customer wants.
I think that is really an important point. Somebody said to me years ago, the good salesperson has a small mouth and big ears. And what they were trying to say in a very sort of blunt weapon kind of fashion was, you need to listen to your customer, what they actually are trying to do. And certainly that I've experienced more in the last, I'd say, since COVID, of dealing with loss prevention professionals who are just frustrated because they don't feel they're being listened to. So let's say, for instance, they have a visit from someone who is promoting a particular security system or service, yeah, and they say, well, the standards say you got to do this and you got to do that and you got to do that. And they're right, the standards must be adhered to because they're there for a reason, yeah, but they're not really addressing what the customer's asking them in the first place, which is, we've got a problem,
yeah, and we want to solve the problem,
yes, and we're asking you to give us help to do that. We need to listen to what we're saying.
A company that said, we have a product that can solve your problem, and then you come and you're not solving the problem because you're not listening to what the problem is in the first place. Like, we know you have a solution. We just need to be told how to do the thing to make them happen.
Well, not even that. I think that's where the industry has got some issues, because we're an industry that's awash with solutions, yeah? And I know I've said to you a bunch of times that if you asked me years ago what the solution to everything was, I'd have said it's a smoke generator. Because when all you've got is a hammer, everything looks like a nail. So I'd try and solve every problem with a smoke generator. Clearly, it's not realistic.
No.
And because it's awash with solutions, the tendency of the industry on the supply side is to turn up with your solution and try and make it fit every scenario. which is, all right, we're not selling by fear, but we're definitely not listening to what the clients need, yeah? And actually, the clients have got better insights into their problems than we could ever have.
Yeah.
So I think you're 100% right. The first thing to do is listen to the people who are at the sharp end of the stick, basically.
You turn up for 5 minutes of a survey and then go, okay, you need 12 fog generators.
Mm.
But the customer's got an outdoor warehouse.
It's not going to work.
No, it's not going to happen. But, you know, you're just not listening to what the problem is, and you can't solve problems that you don't know what the problem is.
I would be interested to know what an outdoor warehouse looks like.
A shed.
Oh, right.
With no sides.
With no sides.
Yeah. That's an outdoor warehouse, right?
Yeah, I suppose so, yeah.
Anything's a warehouse if you've got a shed.
I don't know. You don't know where you go with that.
I lost it.
So, what I noticed was I regard myself as becoming part of what I would have regarded when I was entering the industry at your sort of time as part of the dinosaur crew. You know, I'm part of the older guard, if you like. And what I've noticed is as teams change within our clients, you know, there's younger professionals coming through with different ideas than the industry may have considered before.
Yeah. Yeah?
And that's where a lot of the frustration comes in not being listened to. And I think that's also where the industry lets itself down and takes that fear-based approach. Oh, yeah, but if you don't do it the way we say, we're the experts, something bad will happen to you.
Yeah.
And I think what I've experienced as well is where you do listen is very, very positive because, again, taking that collaborative approach, like some of the products that we've developed have been from, I won't name them because we're not selling in this podcast, it's not what the point is, but they've been from a collaborative approach where clients have said, yeah, what you've got isn't quite what we're after, but what we are looking for is this. Exactly.
And
yeah.
When we're able to provide it.
How powerful is that?
Exactly.
You know, it really works.
And they're never unhappy with the solution because it's the solution to the problem that they have in the first place.
Yeah. So we said we were going to keep these to half an hour. And I think we're pretty much achieving that. I don't think we solved like the world's problems with selling fear by security, but we certainly discussed it.
Not yet.
Not yet.
Well, I'd be interested to hear what other people have to say about sales, especially if somebody has a different opinion. You know, if we say that doing the right thing and having that responsibility and duty of care towards the customer to make sure that they're getting a product for them, you know, what they need, maybe somebody thinks that's the wrong way and maybe we should just be, you know.
Yeah.
Or if we've said anything, something else.
If you've said anything, we think, oh, you've not quite hit it on there, but this is our opinion. Tell us.
Yeah.
Like I said, the purpose of this podcast is to get comments on stuff that we're not 100% on ourselves. You probably heard that in what we were talking about. But also we want people on here as well to talk to us, give us different views so that we can examine exactly what we think about it. So,
Lewis, I agree.
We should very briefly talk about the next episode.
The next episode. So what I'm going to do is just quickly tell you what we're going to talk about next week. So if anybody's got anything you want to say that maybe you want us to talk about or think about before then, that you've got sort of a however long it's going to be before, you know, we're there. So next topic will be regulation and laws affecting the security industry. More concisely, how does the current industry regulation actually support or hinder the development of effective security systems?
Yeah. So that standards piece we already mentioned where the standards say you've got to do this, 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 and this. Does that support innovation?
Yeah.
Does it support future development?
Mm-hmm.
And does it give barriers?
And what about products where there is no regulation? I think that's even more important and interesting to talk about because it's totally unregulated. You can kind of do whatever you want. There's no rules. So maybe that's where the innovation is. But we'll talk about it next time. In the meantime, thank you all for listening. Thank you, Matt, for whatever you did.
thanks, Jack.
Yeah. We'll
catch you next time.
See you next time.
Yeah.